to the December 22nd, 2020 session of Tangerine SDR and HamSci Personal Space Weather Station meetings. My name is Dave, KV0S, and this week I've been doing a little bit of programming back on the discovery and loading of software. I'm building a set of tools for that and making sure everything works properly and going back to my OpenHP SDR code. So I've been doing that. And then the other day I was talking with my former director, and he mentioned that the people from Boulder got the magnetometer installed in Columbia. So there's now a research grade magnetometer, maybe 5 miles from both Dave's houses. And so I wrote to Dolores and asked if we could have access to the data. And she said that she was going to contact Jennifer Gammon. I don't know if you know her, Nathaniel, but.
And it's Gagnon.
Huh?
Gagnon.
Gagnon. And she's the PI on this magnetometer project. So, but it sounds like they might be willing to share the data. They were talking about, so the sensor was put in sometime in the fall, November, December, and they're talking about having a data source available in January. So as soon as I find out something, we'll pass it along. But we have currently two of our magnetometers running full time here in Columbia, and then we have one in New York, of course, and hopefully Homan will get his going soon. And so we're gradually accumulating data, and we'll soon be able to have several sites. And I'm assuming it's okay to share our data with them if they want it. So that's it for me. Next on the list is Nathaniel, W2NAF. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, Dave. It's been a busy week for me. I've mostly been working on writing reports, and I just about have the annual report for this DAISY done. And I think Human, I'm not sure if you're on the line, when I said before, thank you very much for your input. I am going to be putting it in tomorrow, so I will definitely keep your text in there. So thank you very much. W2NAF, back to net.
Fine business. Next on the list is Dave, KD0EAG. Go ahead, Dave.
Hello. I've been mostly just writing code, Python code mostly, this week. Sitting here grinding my teeth and reading documentation, and I'm a little out of date on some of the things. So just the usual for me. Nothing very exciting here. That's it, I think.
Fine business. And next on the list, we have Bill, AB4EJ. Go ahead, Bill.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Good evening to you and good evening to the net. I worked on something that turned out to be relatively unproductive this week. I was trying to write a little interface to go between the local host, which now can output UDP data that GNU Radio can read. And I wanted to write a little interface to be able to push this data to SpectLab, which is a Windows-based program. Well, they give a couple of different options for how to do this. There's something called WM copy data, which is a memory transfer mechanism. I was able to get a couple of programs to push data back and forth between two programs, test programs that I was working with, but I was never able to get Spectrum Lab to pay any attention to or acknowledge the data I was trying to send it. So, all right, so there's another thing that they say you can supposedly do. There is a way you can set up Spectrum Lab to act So they say, either as a receiver of TCP raw data or as a server. And I'm able to push data to it, but there is virtually no documentation on how to format it. So it gets some data and then it hangs up because it doesn't understand the layout of the data. And I've tried various ways that trying to interpret the documentation, which is very sparse, as how to format. Oh, it looks like there's two headers. There's one like a stream header, and then another thing that looks like a VT49, but they don't say, does that go in a separate block? Or it's just, so I probably burned and wasted 4 days working on that. I'm putting that aside for now because it's not really that important, but I thought it would be nice, you know, to have a complimentary product to go along with GNU Radio. If you could, because Spectrum Lab has so many other cool features that it'd be fun to be able to use Spectrum Lab with the localhost. But if somebody knows how to do that, I wish somebody would contact me, because otherwise it's going to take a good deal more research. I have quite a bit of non-working code generated. So anyway, that was my wasted week. Back to Ned.
Well, sounds like an interesting project, but maybe find a bright graduate student to sick on that one.
We don't have, this isn't Princeton. We don't have graduate students who actually know how to do anything here.
Oh, okay.
If you want somebody who knows how to do something, you get somebody who's a sophomore in CS. And
okay.
They will come in and develop anything you want because they've been coding since they were in sixth grade. But anyway.
Well, very good. Next on the list, we have Dan in for XWE. Go ahead, Dan.
Thank you, Dave. And hello, everyone. Can you hear me okay? I'm losing packets right and left here. Okay, so I worked on scripts this week. Of note, the last one I worked on got working pretty well is for the Odroid N2, and it is Dave Witten's free DV GUI and all the associated audio codec stuff that comes along with it, including LPCNet, which is a neural intelligence thing that allows the free DV GUI to do a couple of the more obscure modes in free DV. Also of interest is I have GNU Radio scripts for both the Raspberry Pi and for the Odroid, and they seem to work really well. I've run both of them a couple of times. They take about 3.5 hours to compile on the Raspberry Pi and the Odroid. Raspberry Pi 4 and the Odroid takes about 6.5 hours to compile on the Raspberry Pi 3. And I'm not so sure that it's real useful once you've compiled it on the 3. On the 4, it seems to be very useful. Anyway, that was kind of my effort for the week, and that's about it from here. Back to you, Dave.
Well, fine business. Are you putting those on GitHub?
They are on GitHub, and they are reachable by github.com/n4xwe. I know Git pretty well. I don't know the GitHub webpage workings very well, and I haven't quite figured out how to make them searchable from the search line on GitHub. So, but if you just do github.com/n4xwe, it'll take you right to my front page.
And if you want a real challenge,
they're available for you.
If you want a real challenge, see if you can make a script that will generate GNU Radio so where it runs on Windows. I'll meet you in 18 months. So you can
do it.
So,
yeah, Roger, I understand.
And I mean version 3.8, too. Version 3.8, not
so.
Yeah.
That's so, some time for the next
good
release.
Luck.
Yeah. So, Dan, I'll try to link your code up in the Tangerine SDR web pages if I haven't already.
Okay, great. Yeah. And the versions I have compiled are 3.8.2. So,
okay.
It is the latest and greatest version.
Okay.
And I've also included the Osmo SDR, which, and also the HP SDR code that Tom McDermott did, that is the interface for open HP SDR stuff.
Okay.
They compile. There actually are two versions. One doesn't have the Osmo SDR and the HP SDR. The other one does. Anyway, okay. Back to you.
Okay, very good. Next on the list, let's see, David Mack, N1 HAC, right?
Yes. Didn't get my thing updated, but that's okay. You know me. Been working on HF radios and VLF radios, but pre-Tangerine, things that I hope ultimately Tangerine would replace. But setting up a VLF receiver here and HF receiver for out in the field. So back to net.
Fine business. And next on the list is Dev. Go ahead, Dev. He's on the telephone, so I guess he can't talk, or can he? We'll go on. Dev?
Yeah, it is. Is it working?
Yes.
Yeah, sorry, I was muted. Okay. So we are getting closer to the holidays, and we have few talks set for ourselves for the holidays, as we had a good discussion last Friday with a group of experienced ionospheric physicists to understand the data that we have collected here in Scranton. So we have our talks cut out, and we're trying to see if we can get something more tangible in near future. Thank you.
Okay, very good. And next on the list, we have Gary, AF8A. Go ahead, Gary.
Yeah, good evening, everyone. Not much to add. Just want to wish everyone a happy winter solstice in the Northern Hemisphere and back the net.
Fine business. And next on the list is Greg, VA3CBN. Go ahead, Greg.
I'm just listening in. Nothing to report.
Very well. Good. Welcome, Greg. And next on the list is Homan. Homan, I don't remember your call sign, so.
Oh, KVD2MCR, sorry. yeah, good evening, everyone. Yeah, nothing in particular to report. It's been a very busy week for me. I'm still actually proctoring my exam. That's still going on. Just looking at the WebEx and the web-based exam system right now. Anyway, I'm working on the instruction manual, the installation manual, based on what Dave Witten and Jules provided me. And I'm still expecting to receive a package from Scotty. So based on what I see from the package with all the pipes and stuff, I'll try to establish more concrete installation manual. But otherwise, yep, that's all I have to say for this week. Back to net.
Very good. And let's see, next on the list is James, KG4DSG. Go ahead.
You got me?
Yep.
Got audio. Okay. Yeah, I'm just listening in. Missed the meeting last week, but I saw the recap. So back to net.
Fine business. So next on the list is Jonathan, KC3EEY. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Hi, everybody. I don't have too much to report this week. I was very busy with work. Back to the net.
Fine business. And next on the list, we have Michael, AAAK. Go ahead, Michael. So it's Michael in the hat, right? So next on the list, we have Scotty, WA2DFI.
Hello there, Dave and group. I like your hat there, Mike. That's you can stash a lot of stuff up there that nobody can see. at least one or two SDRs up under your hat. Anyway, this week's been really not good. I've been under the weather most of the week, so I haven't gotten much of anything done except just trying to rest and get back above the weather. And fortunately, it was 70 degrees today, so it's kind of nice outside compared to what I hear. I guess the last time I talked to Nathaniel, he was in the middle of a blizzard. And so anyway, that's it for here. Back to you, Dave.
Fine business. And next on the list, we have Tom, N5EG. Go ahead, Tom.
Oh, good evening, Dave. Good evening, everyone in the group. Not much activity related to the project. Been working on the server, did an upgrade to the hypervisor and watched everything go down in flames. So, typical server stuff. Back to the group.
Well, that brings us to the end of the list. And so we're open for general discussion. I did go out and take some pictures of the conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn tonight. So that was visible by eye for me.
Can you show the picture? I went out and looked at it. I could see it using binoculars, but you have any pictures you can show?
No, I don't have it downloaded. It was on my good camera.
Totally clouded out here in New Hampshire, unfortunately, so I'm going to have to rely on others.
Yeah, same here in Pennsylvania.
I had a good view of it from here, but it only was about an hour before it went below the horizon. So
that's same here.
Yeah, that's very low.
So, but I just thought I'd mention that.
Nathaniel, how much snow did you get?
About 14 inches.
Okay, I got 18, but 20 miles from me, they got 48.
Wow, that's a lot of
snow. They had lots of people with 3 to 4 feet of snow.
I keep trying to convince Rachel that we need to buy a snowmobile.
How about Aurora? Have you guys ever seen Aurora recently when the storm hit?
The guy from Alberta, was saying Martin. He was saying it was common outside his house.
Yeah. We haven't seen a good aurora this far south in quite some time. We'll see how this solar cycle does us. And the CME that just went past was, BZ was positive, so it just basically went by laminar flow. Didn't do much even to the ionosphere.
So, hey, Nathaniel, we could take a vote on here for your snowmobile. Would that help convince Rachel that you should buy one?
Probably.
Or
I think it more comes down to, can we use it for more than 3 days a year?
Yeah.
Yeah, well,
it's not like Svalbard.
Oh no, I know, that was great where you could just where I'd drive my snowmobile to school every day. Those are the days.
Yeah, well, I think we're gonna have a snowy year. It'll mm-hmm. be interesting to see if it pans out.
Yeah. I mean,
Between El Nino and a lot of aerosols in the air from things like the wildfires, we may be a little cooler this year and get some decent snow. Certainly looking that way so far.
Mm-hmm. I think, Nathaniel, maybe what you just need to do is get some sled dogs and a sled, and because you can play with the dogs no matter what the weather.
That's true. That would be fun.
Yeah, in fact, we have a sled woman who has a sled dog team up the road here. She has a cart that she runs them with when there isn't snow.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Anthony would love that.
They do eat all the time, whether there's snow or not, though.
They do.
Yes.
Yeah, well, they need to be pets, though. It's not just something you keep in a kennel. They have to be pets.
Yeah.
So you love them anyway, and you're happy to feed them. So become like a family.
That would definitely be fun.
But you might
we have lots of deer.
Deer?
Yeah, deer. We have lots of deer.
We had in our neighbor's yard, our neighbor has a feeder for them.
Uh-huh.
My brother-in-law went past, he lives next door, and this other fellow on the other side has his feeder. My brother-in-law counted 47 deer in the front yard of my neighbor's house yesterday. What they do is they come over and eat the corn in his yard, and then come into our yard for dessert. And so eat every ornamental flower and shrub. What you have to do is you have to put chicken wire around everything that you want to save.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's unusual, Bill, for Alabama to have that many deer.
My brother.
Well, I mean, if you feed them.
Oh, yeah. But Pennsylvania is known for having high deer populations.
Oh, we have them by the thousands. I mean, yeah. I don't know anybody who hadn't hit them on the road. Both my wife and I have hit them on the road. I don't
remember many in all the years we lived down there, and we lived, you know, in fairly wooded terrain off the, you know, southern Birmingham.
Oh, South Birmingham, precisely where? McCalla?
No, not that far south. I mean, in the southern suburbs, but I mean, in what's it called? Mountain Brook. Yeah.
Mountain Brook. Oh,
on the edge of the golf course or near the golf course. But
yeah, that's the high rent district.
Yeah, I know. It was kind of, yeah, but there was lots of woods, and my parents' house was in the woods, and I never saw a deer. Lots of chipmunks.
My brother lives in Chesterfield, and he hates the deer. They come in, like you said, Bill, and eat everything.
Yeah, I dislike them.
They bark off of trees, and they kill plants, and he's trying to find ways to shoo them away.
So it depends a lot as to whether or not you have plants that you care about in your yard.
Yes.
Yeah. So if you don't have any plants that you care about in your yard, then the deer can be quite nice. If you care about your plants.
If you don't care about the plants, the deer won't either. They'll leave them alone. It's just some kind of Murphy thing going on there.
I've noticed that. Yeah.
That reminds me of a friend of mine who lives back in Maryland, and his neighbor had horses.
Mm.
And the horses would come up and strip the bark off of trees along the property line and kill them. So he ended up having to put like chicken wire around the tree trunks to the height where the horses couldn't reach. Yes. And he told, I can't really repeat all the things that he did to this horse, but he and the horse had a little, shall we say, alpha bonding ritual that they went for him to explain to the horse how he wasn't supposed to be eating the tree bark. I don't know how well that, I think the chicken wire works better, but
yes, I think so.
Oh my gosh.
We have a resident resident little family that's in our neighborhood here that kind of grows and gets bigger some years and gets smaller, but there's usually half a dozen to 10 that eat everything, of course.
So are these deer or horses?
Oh, I was back on deer. Sorry about that.
Well, at least you can ride a horse. I don't think you can ride a deer.
No, they're not good for much.
Well, I spoke with Veronica and her father today, and we're going to send them an antenna and get them set up on HF.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So it sounds like they have a nice house plot of land out in western New Jersey as well, a few acres, and it sounds very good for some HF work. So I'm going to send them a off-center fed dipole and lend her the club's IC7300 for a little while, and then we'll get a grape station out there and let her have some hands-on experience with some of these radios.
That's good.
Nathaniel, who did you say that was? Did you say that was Veronica?
Yeah, Veronica.
Okay.
Yeah.
Has she been on the air actually since she got her license or?
Not really. I think maybe she got on Echolink a little bit, but she's played around with some Kiwi SDRs, but no, not really. So we're going to fix that.
Yeah. Yeah. When you first get your license and haven't been on the air before, it's a little bit of feels like a high wire act.
Yes.
When you first start trying to do it.
Yeah. That's right. So I agree.
It's a little bit intimidating for the newbie.
Yes. Well, yeah. So I had a Zoom with both her and her dad today, and we were going over like where to put up the antenna, and he was like, "Yeah, this looks all good," and they were very encouraging about it.
You know, if you don't know what the procedure is, it's intimidating to get on there and try to make a QSO. I know. I remember my first logbooks, page after page of CQs unanswered. calling people that never came back to me, and it's like, because I didn't have much of an antenna, but still it was kind of discouraging. So
Nathaniel, does she know any hams in their community?
I don't think she does yet, but she definitely lives close to some.
Yeah, she should try to get a hold of a club or something nearby that can give her a little help.
Yeah,
they're usually more than happy to help new people.
Yeah.
Another thing that's fun is I'm set up for all bands and I'm available most of the time. she can contact me and we can set up a sched and I can talk her through some of the stuff on the air. So that'll kind of get you past the, you got to get desensitized to be able to push the transmit button. You got to be willing to push the transmit button. And if you're talking to somebody, you know, or, you know, on a schedule, it makes it it's a little bit easier.
I agree with that.
So put her in touch with me and I will try and set up a sched once she has an antenna up.
That'd be really nice. Yeah. Hopefully soon after the new year. I don't know how fast all this stuff is going to go, but yeah, I think that'll be really good.
So does she live in Scranton or in New Jersey?
She lives in New Jersey.
Okay.
Near Clinton, New Jersey, probably about an hour from Scranton.
Yeah. So like Dave says, look for antennas and knock on doors or find a local club is the best thing.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, I know my friend Pete Teklinski, who is the club advisor at NJIT. He lives very close to them.
Well,
okay, there you go.
Get them introduced to each other.
Yeah, they've met each other on Zoom. So,
okay,
yeah, everyone does know each other. And I have another student, Tommy Barron. He's been a ham before I knew him. So I gave him the job of contacting all the other universities that we could think of. And he's supposed to ask what type of antenna system they have. Can they send pictures and give them details? And he's supposed to compile that all into a presentation so that we can then go to our administration and say, hey, look, MIT has this and Columbia has this and Penn State has this and we should have one too.
There's a good ham club system across the Southeast. Bill may know. Do you know the one at Alabama there?
When they had their inaugural meeting in the fall, I went to one of their meetings and to give a presentation about the personal space weather project. And there were, besides the club advisor there were three people there.
Yeah.
And one person who was an alum. And I was met with a deafening silence after I gave the presentation and asked who would be interested in working on this.
Yeah.
And so the club, you know, Alabama is not really known as a school where you go if you're interested in tech and all that stuff. It's much more of a party school.
I was the advisor for the Missouri club for several years. And actually, they helped me get my novice license years ago.
Hmm.
But there was a guy at the University of Tennessee that was, he was a doctor, an MD doctor, and somehow he had wrangled a room that was under the bleachers of the stadium, and the stadium for Tennessee is downtown, so, but then their antenna was up on some of the scaffolding up above the stadium, so. But he was actively trying to recruit all the SEC schools to kind of collaborate. And the SEC schools used to have not really a contest. They just tried to all make a contact was the first weekend in December, which was like the last regular game of the year in the SEC conference by the old scheduling.
Yeah.
And so they tried to get all the ham clubs to at least contact each other. And I don't know. But, So there are those kinds of things going on too.
Yeah. There's
Are you looking for other radio station pictures and gear and outfits to add to your presentation?
As long as they're from universities. Yeah.
Okay. I got one for you. This is a pretty awesome one. So it's the school I went to. This is W2SZ.
Uh-huh.
They have their own building.
That's RPI, right?
RPI, oh. Yeah. And this is actually a huge upgrade from when I was there because they had an old Army Quonset hut when I was there.
Oh, wow.
And it leaked air like crazy. So what you did is... there's no point in turning the heat on ahead of time because more heat went out through the cracks in the building than came out of the furnace. So you know, I made sure to wear heavy clothes when you went up in there. So this is much nicer than the original one. And this, the view from their Radio Shack is there.
Wow.
I believe that's because if the Hudson River is down here, and what you don't see, actually, this doesn't look right because I don't know what that is. But the view is similar because it looks out over the Hudson Valley. And what you don't see is behind you is a hill, the steep hill up where the water tower for Troy is. And their antenna towers are where the water tower is. So wow. The antenna towers are in the highest point in the town for miles. And I know when I was there, these guys, they built a 8-element 15-meter beam.
Wow.
And you can imagine how big the boom was. I think it was a 3-inch boom.
All Scotty, I see, the view that they're say it right there. It's from Mount Greylock.
That's Greylock. Okay, because they have an expeditionary trip every year from the VHF contest to try and beat everyone else out. So I guess I don't have a view from the... Yeah, because that's a giveaway here. This, there's no road like this in front of the radio station.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what they did is they put up this 8-element 15-meter beam. Now, it's fed with 1-inch hard line about 300 feet up the hill at the highest point on a tower. And this was in 1974. 73, 74. So it was a good sunspot cycle. Was just past its peak and starting to wind down. But they got such a good signal into the Far East, they started handing serial numbers out. And the Japanese guys heard about serial numbers. They thought it was a contest. And they ran like 300 or 400 JAs up this 15-meter beam. They called it Jap cars because, you know, for East cars and West cars, they had Jap cars. Because these guys were really... They were learning Japanese and they wanted to use their language and they wanted to talk to as many Japanese stations as they could. So it was amazing that they built this beam and put it up and did all that. I can tell you however, though, it did not survive the winter.
Yeah.
And I think the next year it became like a 5-element 15-meter beam. Because the boom broke and they had to redo it. But anyway, it was fond memories. This is actually down here. This is more like what it was inside. I don't know. This is the funny thing is here, W2AAU, Dick Fry, he graduated right before I did. So he was hanging around the Radio Shack all the time I was there. But this is a horrible picture. He's up here. You can't hardly see him.
Wow.
But these guys were infamous, or shall I say they were loved or hated, depending on whose side you're on. But they developed the term captive rover. Because they had guys building stuff all year long, and they would go out and they would talk only to W2SZ in the VHF contest. So they get all these multipliers from, on, you know, a 1296 or something, because they have a guy that went out to the county over there and he put up a big antenna, talked just to them, and then took down and went to the next place. So they got in a lot of heat for that because, saying, oh, you guys are cheating because you got all these rover contacts that nobody else can get because they won't talk to us.
Oh, gee.
So I never really was involved in the Greylock. I mean, I heard it going on while I was there, but it was that long hair VHF stuff, and I was into HF, so I didn't pay much attention. But they had some good gear back then. They had a Drake line and a 2K3 amplifier in the main station. And then they had in the poor man station, which was it was a 32V3 and HT37. No, HT37 was the transmitter. I forget. I think it was maybe a 75A1 was the receiver. So even it was no slouch, but it was not a transceiver. So was the and then one of the friends of the guy who was there at W2AAU, he brought a Signal One. His own personal Signal One into the shack. Now, remember, this is like 1973 or 74. Mm-hmm. That was like a $5,000 radio back in the 1970s.
Wow.
So it was a really high-end radio, and he was really proud of that. He brought it in to use it in the DX contest because of the antennas that Zed had. He could connect up to those. But I still remember spoofing him because... Me and a friend of mine were really kind of irritated because this guy was kind of egotistical. So we went in the other room. We turned the Drake light on. We turned the power all the way down,
mm-hmm.
and put it on a dummy load. And then we would call them, with phony call signs. And so we got a call book out. We looked up, it was, I think it was Bahrain. We had two hams, right?
Mm-hmm.
Made up a Bahrain call sign, and we would call him Bahrain call sign and the DX contest. Now, like, that would never happen, right?
Oh my gosh.
And then we heard him just throw something big and heavy and start swearing and stomping around in the other room. So we quick turned everything off and went and sat down in the lounge and waited to see what he would do. But then he'd get on there and he was swearing at the bootleggers who were continually harassing him. Because he when we call him, he just QSY.
Huh.
And then we QSY with him and call him again. So now, you know, that's not going to happen. And
yeah.
So we did have our fun, you know. Yeah.
Anyway. Well, the one thing I was going to tell you, Nathaniel, keeping a club going is hard.
Yeah. I mean,
from a faculty point of view.
Yeah.
Because the university, at least in our university, student clubs are student clubs. Now, right. You're an advisor, but you can't keep the club going in between students. And having a continuous chain of students is a hard thing to maintain.
Yeah, that's going to be a challenge. Well, but
yeah, we have that experience at Dartmouth. We're officially a club, but it's hard to keep students.
Yeah. And there's usually 10 or 15 or more faculty. Maybe were in the club when they were a student, but they're more than willing to help. But it's hard to get a hybrid club going. The university doesn't really encourage that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at ASU, I know it's been through it since I've been here, which is a long time, actually. It's been through at least three iterations where it goes down to zero.
Mm-hmm.
And they lose their room and they take all the antennas down, they sell everything off, and then there's no radio club. And then if they get a group of students together that has enough interest, then they get it started again and go buy the gear. And I still remember this one guy, he bought an S-line at the ASU surplus equipment store because they liquidated the ham club. And they had an S-line. And he got it for like $200 because they didn't know what it was. And they just put it up on the block for sale for, you know, get rid of that stuff.
Wow.
And so it goes round and round, up and down, up and down. So,
yep. Well, I think our club is kind of going to be co-sponsored by the Department of Physics and Engineering with me. And then also through the student organization. So that should give it a little bit more stability, I think.
Yeah.
Well, especially if you've got a professor who's who is there all the time.
Yeah, and it's actually written into my career proposal that I'm going to make the ham radio work. So that kind of motivates things a bit.
Yep.
Yeah.
Our club, we've got a lot of alumni in it.
And I can include, I have to have a service component for my tenure dossier, and creating a ham radio club counts as service.
All right. Nathaniel, were you asking for pictures of radio clubs?
Yes.
Ours is over in the engineering school,
mm-hmm.
and was recently reconstituted. We actually got a whole bunch of our antennas kicked off the roof of the engineering school because they said, we don't do radio here.
Yeah.
Why?
They don't teach RF in engineering.
Somebody
school
didn't
very much
like
anymore.
The view. We put on a new addition, which uh-huh. had a balcony, and somebody uh-huh. didn't like the view being marred by antennas.
Yeah, I keep hearing this. Jim Brakel had a very similar discussion with me.
And but we did get our closet back, and we do have some antennas. And unfortunately, we don't have a lot of student support, but we do have a club. We have a great call sign too. We want to keep it W1ET.
Yeah.
All right.
That is a really good call sign. Jonathan Rizzo, how are we going to keep our club going? Is Jonathan there?
So Nathaniel, I was wondering, how soon do you need a picture if it
within a couple weeks.
Okay.
Whenever.
Because I don't get over to the Thayer School. I'm, of course, over at physics, but I can get Eric Hansen perhaps to take a picture for us.
That'd be great.
And Nathaniel, there is a picture of the University of Alabama club station on their QRZ.com webpage. And I'm sure that they would be happy to have you use it.
So I was going to say, I know Alabama does some, at least create some technical people. Scott Bounds, who's at Iowa, and we do sounding rockets with him. He's went to Alabama.
Yeah.
Case Club, they got a pretty good setup, don't they, Nathaniel?
Yes, we are definitely contacting Case's Club. I think I gave, on the list so far, I gave him like Case Western, Penn State. There's a whole bunch. NJIT's needs, their antenna needs to be redone. So I don't think I included that one.
But the if you look up W4UAL, you will on QRZ, you will find the there's a lot of photos. You got to scroll all the way to the bottom to see a picture of the UA club club station. They don't include any pictures of their antennas, but there are antennas up on top of one of the university buildings. But you can see a picture of the shack anyway. If you
there it is.
Use that.
For yeah, something. That's very nice.
Yeah, did you know how the term shack came to be?
No.
I was just reading this, reading a book on old wireless radio, that the first radio station set up by the Marconi Company on board a ship for testing was literally a shack pitched on the deck of a ship.
Huh.
And the radio gear was installed there to do the testing. And so that kind of caught on and it became the Radio Shack from then on.
That's really cool.
This looks like a field day setup. Is that?
Yeah, I think WUAL has been known to operate field day from the quad, which is the big place in front of the library, and Denny Chimes is there and stuff. I have not participated with them because I've usually participated with the Tuscaloosa Amateur Radio Club rather than the UA Club. Because the Tuscaloosa Amateur Radio Club has a lot more members than the UA Radio Club. But sometimes people from the UA Radio Club will come to the TARC ham at a field day and work a radio or two. So
cool.
Pretty cool, yes.
So anyway, if you'd like to use that for something, it's there.
Thank you. I will let Tommy know. I think the other thing I need to do over here is I really need to get another antenna up on my property here because right now I've just been using my one antenna just for the chirp sounder. So it's just been on receive only mode, which it's been running nicely for about 7 days now, which is really good. But it'd be nice to be able to use the antenna for some other things too.
Dave, what was the magnetometer station that you just mentioned? I missed the earlier part when you mentioned NOAA Dolores Nips.
They set one up in Columbia, Missouri, Jennifer is, had worked on some of the power line projects, you know, because they get power surges when they're magnetic events. And there's a section of the United States that's kind of from Missouri to Scotty in the Southwest that have no magnetometers. And because we have one in Boulder or we have Fredericksburg, and there's nothing between the two.
Until now.
And Dolores grew up in Missouri, and her father has a farm somewhere near between here and Kansas City. And I think she was trying to put one on her father's farm as well. but they put one at here in Columbia at a site that's maintained by the Atmospheric Science Department.
Okay.
So Dave Witten has been out there, but it's a little bit remote. So I don't know if they actually have a wire or just a Wi-Fi running from the station back to the farm buildings. I think it's just Wi-Fi.
I see.
They must have power to it, and they must have, they've run something out there, wherever it is.
What they use normally is a commercial weather station, and they set those up. And the system they have across the state, they usually set them up next to a school, like an elementary school, and then they use it in their teaching science, and then they hook on the Wi-Fi that the school has. So, but they were planning this last year. I met with Dolores before COVID became a thing, and she was interested in collaborating. And then all of the COVID stuff kind of put us all on hold. Now, I don't know what they're going to do with the data exactly, but I asked for permission to access some of the data. I don't know if they're going to publish it or if they're just going to use it for their research project.
I mean, if that's really, that's associated with NOAA, then I believe the data should be public. I know Jennifer has a company, private company, who runs for space weather monitoring, whatever. I don't really know what she does, but.
Well, Jennifer is the PI of the project.
So if that's the private company's property, then maybe the data may not be public. Then.
No, the property where they put the magnetometer is university property.
Oh, okay.
But even if it's on university property, the magnetometer itself could be on a grant that's to her private company.
It could be. But I've been I had met Dolores in the past. She spent some time here a year back, 12 years ago. She was in our department for a year. And so I got to know who she was. And she actually was a good friend of my brother-in-law who worked for the Severe Storms Lab in Norman and is retired now. So.
Yeah, I see their grant. They have a DAISY grant as well. So they have a DAISY track too.
So would that indicate that it's private or that they would make the data public?
Well, it looks like it's to her company, Physics Incorporated. And there she is. Here's the abstract.
Well, Dolores is interested in, you know, so she's been encouraging me.
Yeah, I think there's a good chance they'll share the data.
Well, even if they'll just let us calibrate against it.
That's the main thing that I was thinking was calibrating against so that our numbers come out.
I'm almost sure. Like, I can't see any good reason why they would not do that.
Is NSF like NASA where you have to share your data?
I'm not sure.
I know.
Certainly true of USGS and everybody else.
I think you get a certain amount of time to keep the data to yourself and to get something published. I think after you do have to have like some plan for releasing the data.
Well, and I only asked for the Columbia site.
Right.
I didn't ask for their whole data set.
Yeah. And that's a very reasonable request. So that's an extremely reasonable request. And for doing things like checking against our magnetometers, that's also reasonable.
Right.
And usually data providers, like, they will be very reasonable about it too. If you, like, sometimes you need to make them a co-author, or you just have to acknowledge it properly.
Right.
So as long as you work with the PI and follow the rules, it'll be
right.
So I think they have every good reason to be cooperative.
They probably get points, brownie points, and other points for being collaborative too. That's a big thing now.
I would think NSF would encourage that.
Yeah,
I think so. I tried my report to them on our project is extremely collaborative.
And if we do get this collaborative link, then you can report it on yours.
That's right. All sorts of stuff like that. Did you see Jules was in the news this week again?
No.
Yeah, I was going through my Google news and he showed up in the news and I learned something new yet again about him. Let me see if I can find it. Apparently his boyhood home in Clark, New Jersey is being demolished and they're replacing it with...
It's already demolished.
Yeah, it's already demolished. Yeah, so this is the article that popped up. Put it in the chat there. And then, right, so yeah, two kids, a ham radio, and the world at their fingertips, how the Maddie brothers made history in Clark. And they go on to talk about them. And apparently, you know, they became famous for their work communicating with Antarctica at the beginning of the Antarctic program. And Jules's brother, John Maddie, it said he invented the free electron laser and later became a professor at the University of Hawaii. And it also says that Jules invented Easy Pass.
Huh. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That's why he knows a lot about keeping noise out of sensors, because he created the Easy Pass. It was really hard to keep the cops radios and the semis, you know, CBs and things from messing it up.
So other than Dave and I and Jules, is anybody else set up their magnetometer and have it working yet?
I haven't got mine yet, but I'm working on it. I need to have a, if you're going to get continuous data, I'm going to have its own processor for it.
Yeah. I'm running mine off my Odroid, and I think Dave and Jules are both running them off a Raspberry Pi 4.
Yeah. Well, I've got some straight Raspberry Pi 2s. I don't know if that will run on that.
If any of you do set one up, I'd like to at least know, you know, the individuals that are collecting data to start doing data analysis. And then Dave's going to start collecting our data. I was kind of concerned because my data for the axes is very flat. But when I looked at the Fredericksburg site, it's flat too. So
that's what Jules has been saying too, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we haven't had a whole lot of activity down this far south.
Yeah.
Anyway.
There's been a lot of activity up way up north, but not down this far. And I don't know. I found a site. I don't know where there's stacked sites, and they're by continent. And I think it's space weather. It's got another word in there. I have a link to it somewhere. Oh, let's see.
By stacked, you mean multiple sites on a common graph?
Yes.
Yeah, there's a Greenland chain, there's a Norway chain, and there's a Canada chain that you can get access to. Canada chain's useful for us, of course, because if it gets down to St. John's, it's getting close to us here in New Hampshire.
Here, spaceweatherlive.com. If you roll down, there's a stack for Europe and a Canadian one, and then a stack for North America. And FRD is Fredericksburg. And there's a Boulder in there somewhere too. And then you can also, if you go to more data, you get the USGS plot by station. And it's geomags.usgs.gov plots. Do you want me to put either of those links in, or do most everybody aware of those?
The spaceweatherlive.com website is very nice.
Yes, I like that as a way to just figure out, is there any activity going on?
Yeah, I've usually been going to spaceweather.com, but this has perhaps a little more information.
I don't know. I'm running on a browser or a copy of Zoom on Linux, and it doesn't let me paste in the chat.
Hmm.
So,
Yes, the European one have Tromsø and Andøya and
yeah,
And Doya's where I've been flying rockets.
Well, that's good.
They just had a nice display, it looks like.
Yes, I saw that.
Right around zero UT.
Yeah.
Yeah. This, actually, most people here probably don't know how to interpret this.
Right.
So, yeah, this is the European stack plot. And
that's long European.
There's Nielsen,
Nielsen, yeah.
Arneson, Hoopin, Bjornaya. And so this is the H, the horizontal component. And so basically when you see this, you're seeing large electric currents going overhead. And this is pretty consistent with what you'd expect to see in something called an auroral substorm.
Yep. Well, if you look at North America, about more than half of the stations are basically flat.
You can also see that it's strongest right around here.
Yeah.
So that's where this is organized by latitude. So the highest latitude nice. Stations are going to be up here, and your lowest latitude stations are going to be down here.
And X is time.
Yeah, this is time in UTC. And so you know that the substorm, or that the overall electrojet is strongest right around here, and it's weaker as you go farther north, and then weaker as you go equatorward.
Yeah, it would be cool if we could figure out how to make a graph like that for our stations.
Yeah, well, the trick with us is that most of our stations are going to be in the continental United States.
Yes,
and you're going to be too equatorward to see these types of signatures on a regular basis. So
you need to recruit a couple of Northern Canadian and Alaska people to get a personal space weather.
Right.
I think there are Canadians and Alaskans who are interested.
But in the middle latitude, you'll see some dayside phenomena, such as compression of the magnetosphere. Then you'll see the increase, huge increase in each component of magnetometer. So that's going to be interesting too.
Nathaniel?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm interested. Once you start rolling them out, I'm interested in buying one.
That'd be great, Greg.
Yeah. So,
and where in Canada are you?
I'm so to make it relative for you guys, I'm 2 hours east of Detroit City in Ontario.
Okay.
So roughly. London, Ontario.
Oh, I know where that is.
Not too far from Mike. He's north of Detroit.
Oh, Port Huron. Okay.
Most area in Canada is good in terms of space weather monitoring.
No, but once you start rolling them out, I'm very interested.
Thank you.
Yep.
You're welcome.
Well, we will be distributing more ground magnetometers in the near future.
Cool.
So.
Well, Nathaniel, I'm going to have to go.
And I think I might as well.
Time limit, so.
Yes, I think that sounds like a good plan. This has been fun. We had enjoyed it this evening. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Okay. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays, everyone. Happy solstice.
Merry Christmas.
Happy conjunction.
Yeah, happy conjunction.
Happy conjunction. Merry Christmas.
Yes.
So I guess we'll see. Yes. We will have one of these next week, I guess.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah. I will be out.
You'll be out.
Okay. I'm on the road.
I'll be here.
I'll be around. I'm not going anywhere.
I guess
I haven't got a lot of distractions. Yeah.
Wonderful. So Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas, everybody. Thank you.
Christmas to you all.
Have a great week, everyone.
Bye.
73. Bye.